Hello, welcome again to Comic Connoisseurs. So we'll be talking about Legacy Heroes comics, and of course, the legacies that we think should be preserved and the ones that were totally shat on. Of course, I'm my co-host, Shady from Saskatoon.
Oh, and we're going to talk about a few characters from the 90s tonight, too.
Also with his red ink.
I hate you, Jeff Jones. I hate you so much.
So, this discussion came about because a couple nights ago, I was talking to Red, and I said, hey, Red, did you ever read the really, really terrible J.J. Abrams Spider-Man comic that he wrote with his son, which is one of the worst Spider-Man comics I've ever read in my life?
Is it worse than the Clone Saga?
Makes the Clone Saga look like an Eisner winner.
Oh, dear no, Lord.
No, it doesn't. There's nothing worse than the Clone Saga, Ben. If you say anything's worse than the Clone Saga, then you've either had a stroke or you haven't read the Clone Saga in a long time.
I haven't read it in 10 years, okay? If you want to talk about shitting on a character, continual, long, uninterrupted shitting on a character of Peter Parker, the J.J. Abrams Spider-Man is that. Bowel movement.
What's the elevator pitch on that? Because I saw that and I was like, huh. I wonder how he's going to do lens flares in prose. So what's the story on that, Ben?
Story on that is I wanted to write a different character, but all they gave me was Spider-Man.
I was meant more in terms of what's the plot of the comic, Ben.
Mary Jane died, and Peter Parker is sad. He is so sad he is the worst father in the world. And his son, whose name escapes me, but I'm going to pretend his name is Ben because I don't give a fuck.
His name's Benny.
Is an asshole because his dad's an asshole. And they both miss his mom, even though his son was like, what, five when Mary Jane died? Being raised by Aunt May, who should be fucking ancient by now. Like the fucking ancient would be like going to Aunt May like, what's your secret? Fucking ancient.
He was a fucking mummy when Peter was 16. How's this woman still alive?
I know.
Dr. Octopus gave her some restorative cream. And no, that's not the type lotion. Oh, God. I can't believe I said that out loud.
Yes, you did. And it's your fault. And basically, he resents the fact that his dad's Spider-Man and couldn't save his mom. Turns out Mary Jane is still fucking alive. And
he doesn't even know his dad is Spider-Man first.
Yeah, that's true. He finds the costume and he wants to fucking burn it because he's so pissed off at his dad. And then it turns out Mary Jane's not even dead after all. Like, some evil villain is keeping her in, like, a tube. It turns into, like, a monster creature thing. Look, I am trying to wrap up four issues of shit in two seconds.
This villain is also the lamest fucking villain ever that somehow destroyed all the superheroes in the world. It's a dude who has a robot body and a bunch of fucking robot minions. And Captain America alone would show up and be like, dude, I've kicked the ass of so many fucking people that have robot minions. I don't need the Avengers to take you out, but like, I could just do this alone.
No, it's so low that Cap would be like, you know what? I'm going to call fucking Moon Knight to do this. And I'm just going to drink a lemonade and watch.
Good, because I thought you were going to say it was the superpowered stalker that kidnapped Mary Jane in the early aughts.
No, that would have actually... No, that wouldn't have made it better, but that would have made it cohesive.
And we are talking about JJ.
Yes. Like I said, it wouldn't have made it better. It would have just made it go like, oh, okay, there's a continuity hint. But instead, it's just some guy. It's just some fucking guy. Like talk about fucking mystery box writing. It doesn't make sense. It makes no sense.
And I looked it up, and Cadaverous is the name of the villain that Ben is speaking about. JJ?
And the worst part is Peter figures out Mary Jane pretty much breaks free of Cadaverous' control, able to communicate to Peter and his son, it's me, you know, and Peter's like, oh, okay, I'm going to inject you with some stuff, turns her back to fucking normal, and then he fucking kills himself. Peter fucking kills himself because he was so sad he didn't have Mary Jane for, what, 10 years, And so Mary Jane now has spider powers. Son Benji needs a mentor, and it's like, oh, well, Mary Jane's going to be the mentor now. End!
You know what? That actually sounds worse than the Clone Saga. And by Clone Saga, I mean the original Clone Saga, where Gwen Stacy's college professor starts lusting after her and goes insane and becomes a costume supervillain because he's old and falling apart and he wants that fresh young nookie.
Anyways.
The behind the scenes story was Stanley was getting a shit ton of letters from people like, Gwen Stacy's dead, fuck you. You're an asshole. And he told the current writer, like, bring Gwen Stacy back. I don't care how you do it, just bring her back.
Yeah.
And then he's like, changed his mind, just keep her dead. But we already brought her back and she's walking around. Just keep her dead. Okay, a guy cloned her and
the clone is still around to this day, living in Paris, last I checked. And people either remember it or forget it. They don't care. They don't care. They really don't.
Now, here's the question. There was that infamous storyline during J. Michael Straczynski's run where it was revealed that the Green Goblin knocked up Gwen Stacy and produced those
the Goblin twins, babies. Yeah,
the Goblin babies. Now, could that have possibly been the clone?
No.
Would it explain things?
No. And I have to. I'm not going to defend J. Michael Straczynski, but I will explain the behind the scenes. J. Michael Straczynski had an idea of Peter having kids with Gwen that Gwen hid, and because of the spider powers and stuff, they grew at an accelerated rate. He pitched this as an idea, and J. Michael Straczynski is a television writer, and first and primarily. So he comes from the mindset of there are no bad ideas in writing a story in a writer's room. And The problem is his editor was Joe Quesada. And every suggestion Quesada gave, JMS tried to work with it like he was in the writer's room. Instead of JMS having the strength of will to say, you know what, we're changing this way too fucking much for my suggestion. And I'm not saying his suggestion was a good suggestion, mind you. I'm just saying that JMS should have had the strength of will to say, this is way off the rails from my original pitch. Let's just dump it and do something else. But JMS, because, like I said, he had the television writer's room mindset, he treated it like a collaboration, and anything that Quesada suggested, he's like, okay. And then after he saw the mess he made, he was like, my God, what have I done? Quesada doesn't say anything about this. JMS has famously said that he wants to jettison it. JMS has said, if I could jettison this, I would. When One More Day happened, the one thing JMS wanted, the one thing he wanted out of this whole thing was he wanted to jettison the Goblin Babies. He's like, okay, we can just act like the Goblin Babies never happened. We can do a hard fucking retcon. We could even do like a guidebook that shows everyone beat for beat what the continuity changes are. And we could outright say there are no Goblin Babies anymore. But Quesada's like, no, they're villains. We don't ever like getting rid of villains. Villains are, you know, villains can be reused.
Oh, God. If that was the... And I'm not saying it is or isn't. Just, you know, if that's the actual fucking train of logic, Jesus Christ, how did that man be EIC of Marvel for as long as he was? But you know,
that's the story. That's how the. And again, I'm not saying this as a defense of J. Michael Straczynski. I'm saying this as to shed light on how this happened.
Yeah. Now, when you said legacy characters, heroes, yes, villains, whatever, the first thing that popped in my head in that regard was the Phantom. Because the Phantom's whole shtick, you know, the ghost who walks, the man who cannot die, is predicated on his origin, that, you know, sailing ship around, I forget what the actual year was that the was given in the Lee Falk comics, but, you know, this kid goes overboard, he's rescued by one of the tribes of Bengala, he swears this oath on the skull of his father's killer that he will fight piracy, cruelty, and greed in all its forms, and his son and his son's sons shall follow him. So, I mean, that in itself is a legacy character, although I think with legacy heroes is what you, if I'm guessing correctly, Ben, what you're thinking of legacy heroes is, you know, you have one version of the character and then like a new character becomes like a new incarnation of that hero.
There has to be a persona. Legacy. There has to be a legacy attached to it, in my opinion. Like,
not like, quite the Phantom thing though.
Well, the Phantom is a great example of it. Except for the fact that the Phantom, that was the backstory. We didn't get to know a certain Kit and then have a new Kit show up. It was always a story, like, I think the Roaring Twenties of this guy who trained in the jungle. Go ahead, Red.
A legacy hero does not have to be a new version. Like, let's say Superman has some kids. Yes. Not just one kid. One takes over as Superman, the other has to make their own identities. They're all legacies, though.
Exactly. But let's great example of this is back to Spider-Man and his progeny, because Spider-Man has lots of alternate progeny, and the most successful one is, of course, Mayday Parker, Spider-Girl. I'm still a big fan of the Spider-Girl comic. I think that it is the most interesting part of the series, and I think that it's really funny that to this day in Marvel, Spider-Girl is Marvel's longest continuous running, Marvel's longest continuous running female-led superhero comic. And they fucking, what's it called? They canceled it. They fucking canceled it because they didn't understand. They didn't get it.
They never canceled because they didn't understand. Like, I'm fucking sorry. It went off the rails big time.
Are you talking about April?
I'm talking about more than just April. I'm talking about a lot of shit. Like,
it got fan fiction-y.
It got so bad, like, somebody grabbed the fucking wheel of the train and did a fucking 180. Like, and then the fucking train just plowed into a town and took out the entire fucking town while it slid across the fucking ground. Like, it became almost unrecognizable at the end.
Yeah, the train rolled like the in the end of the movie Money Train, where it's just like rolling, taking shit out. Yeah, because I think the last time we saw Mayday, and I agree with you, Ben, I like the first couple of volumes of Spider-Girl and, you know, the MC2 stuff, because after that, you know, that's when it started to go off the rails. And the last time I think we saw Mayday in comics was Spider-Geddon, and where they bring the Uncle Ben from the radioactive Marvel Universe and into her parallel dimension, and he's joined, like, that Parker family now.
I hate Spider-Geddon for one thing, and that is they killed Spider-Girl's Peter Parker. They fucking killed him. They killed him dead, and then they're like, oh, well, I decided, you know, what was it? It was Anna Marie that was like, oh, I decided to make him the other. So he's coming back. And, you know, people are like, yay. It's like, but he's going to come back as the fucking other. Jesus Christ. Yeah. Talk about fucking monkey paw there.
And, I mean, when you talk about legacy and Mayday, Spider-Girl, like, she, I think one of the core things that has always worked in whatever, you know, continuity of Spider-Man is like where you take him back to high school. Cause there is, I think based on how Spider-Man started back in the 60s, there's something about being a teenager with, you know, powers in high school, you know, it can go a lot of different ways. And, you know, Mayday, you know, it was kind of other end of the spectrum. Like Peter kind of had a shitty high school life and Mayday still had a pretty good high school life. And is, just, I was honestly more interested in seeing her civilian life than the superheroics a lot of the times, to see how well she handled all this, you know, being Spider-Girl, knowing her dad was Spider-Man, Normie Osborn is the guy in the chair for her.
For the first
stuff
half.
Like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot to like about it, and I like the fact that she doesn't always agree with her dad. She fights her dad a lot of the things, but she, in the end, she loves her dad. What makes it so weird is Spider-Girl's a known quantity. It's a known thing. People love it. Most people love it. People look at it fondly. And Marvel's like, well, you know, after the first mini of Renew Your Vows, you're like, well, let's do that again, but with this other character, Anna Marie, I think it's Annie Marie, that the other supposed alternate daughter of Peter Parker and Mary Jane. Or Spiderling, as she's called, which is one of the worst names.
From Renew Your Vows.
Renew Your Vows, the miniseries, not the original, the second one. And there's some okay ideas in it. There are things that you can tell it's definitely written by someone who had issues with the first miniseries, because there's this whole thing where Mary Jane puts on the fucking symbiote. Which, if you know anything about Mary Jane, she would never fucking do that. Ever.
No, not unless it's like some XXX rated adult comic. And I'm guessing here that's about the only time that happens.
It's, yeah, Anna Marie is an okay character. Annie Marie is an okay character. She grates on me sometimes. They're trying to do clever, fun kid. She's nowhere near as bad as some of the other kids. She's not a super smart kid. She's not like Riri Williams. She's not as unlikable as Riri Williams. She's not as pretentious as Kamala Khan. But she's got none of the magic of Mayday. None of it. The only part I liked about Annie is they did these three-issue miniseries during Spider-Geddon called Spider-Girls, where they had Annie and Mayday team up with, what's her name, the other Spider-Woman, the one that, or was it Arana?
Silk?
No, was it Arana?
Is that the one with, like, the spider grappling hook?
No. She had regular spider powers, but she was, like, some sort of spider cult or something.
That's the one. Originally she had like a spider grappling hook, and she didn't have like full spider powers until later on.
Until Spider Island.
Yeah, it was some before that. It was involving Julia Carpenter, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, let's not make it confusing. Part of the problem with that is I liked their interaction in Spider-Girls, because you have Annie looking at the person who could have been like her big sister, and you have Mayday looking at a life that where there's a version of her dad that's still alive, and that they're a happy family, and she's looking at something she just lost. It's the art and the writing in those three issues alone is better than the rest of Spider-Geddon combined.
No, it's one of the first Legacy Heroes that I really got into was not the whole JSA, but was during that first JSA title that Jeff Johns started, on back in the early, late 90s, early aughts, like that, was the character of Mr. Terrific, like Michael Holt. Because, I read up reprints of Justice League comics and the All-Star Squadron title that ran in the 80s when I was young. And, you had this guy, Terry Sloan, the red Union suit, green, I think it was supposed to be an Army Jack. He had Fair Play across his chest. Is one of those characters, like, you get a character like this a lot in Pulp Fiction, primarily these, polymath types. Like, this guy, he's an expert in everything. He can speak two dozen different languages, very Doc Savage type. And I always thought it was really interesting and cool when Jeff Johns, recreated the Justice Society, that he brought in this new version of Mr. Terrific, and how he was, very much inspired by Terry Sloan, but he wasn't you know, he wasn't carbon copy. Like, he wasn't, like, you know, fair play. He was all about fair play, but he had a little more of a scientist bent. You know, he's an atheist for the longest time, which was something they came back to time and again with his character because of how he lost his wife, and that's when he lost his faith and such like that.
I just want to ask something about Mr. Terrific's fucking atheism. There was a comic where he went to fucking heaven. He is standing at the fucking pearly gates. And someone asked him, so how about that atheism? And what he said next was retarded. He said, well, no, I still don't believe in God. What we're seeing here is a paradise dimension that people's consciousnesses are brought to at moment of death to live for eternity. It's you just go like, what?
Yeah, but that was before, through another encounter with, I think it was the Spectre and the villain, the Spirit King, where, you know, he saw his wife and he hadn't, like, he wasn't like a total atheist, but he's just, you know, he's trying to rediscover his faith. And eventually, he got better. But, I mean, and you go, that's not the only character they reinvented for Legacy in there. I mean, you also had Jack Knight Starman, which, you know, came from the James Robinson series that spun out of Zero Hour.
Like, on the topic of atheism and superheroes, there's lots of fucking superheroes that are atheists and shit. Like, Reed Richards met fucking God.
Yes.
He just happened to look like Kirby. Sorry. Yeah.
But it's
he's still a fucking atheist.
Okay, but you get what I'm saying. It's sort of like you're looking at God right here. You're standing in fucking heaven, and you're like, eh. Yeah.
But they never like said, "Oh, hey Reed, what do you think of this now?" I never brought that up. But the thing is, Reed's still a fucking atheist.
That's true, but with Mr. Terrific, they did fucking bring that up at that moment, and he gave this really convoluted idea of explaining scientifically how this could happen, but still there not be a god, just high-powered beings that have all the powers of God. They're able to bring your souls to the afterlife and have you live in paradise for the rest of eternity, but that's not heaven, and the being that brought you here, that could have created the universe, is not God. It's like
okay, Ben, you're going off the rails.
Okay, I'm just saying that it rose by any other name, damn it.
It's not anything new either. That idea and that speech was stolen from fucking Ant-Man.
Yeah. But, you know, going back to the JSA, like, it was in the second run of the Justice Society where it went from JSA to Justice Society of the American, had that really nice trade dress, where they really focused on the idea of the JSA and its legacy. And, you know, you brought in, some whole new characters. Like, you have the new Judo Master. You bring in Wildcat's son, who turns into, like, a werepanther, which was kind of dumb, and they never really got into that. You had a new version of Amazing Man, who is a black superhero that was in the All-Star Squadron, who I think was, like, the grandson or the great-grandson of the original hero. And then you had a character whole made cloth or made from whole cloth and went on to become not that great of a character once he got his upgrade. But you had this guy who eventually became the character Magog. But when he first shows up, he's just this specialist from the United States Armed Forces, and he gets a legacy admission. They call it that in the comics because he's like the last surviving grandson of FDR. And in terms of legacy characters,
what's his power? Super polio?
No. Really, Ben?
Yes, really.
No, his superpower, which led to him becoming the modern day incarnation of Magog from the Kingdom Come comics, and that how that came about would take too long to explain here, is he was him and his squad were charged with stopping looters from sacking museums in Iraq or Afghanistan, and came into contact with some mystic relic, which put this mark in his arm that constantly generated some sort of power, and he found this device there as well that he could use to focus it into blast. And he's like, well, he's basically a super soldier now.
Well, if we talk about legacy characters that have interesting legacies in the DC universe and in the JSA, I have to bring up a character that I think has a very interesting legacy. Atom Smasher.
Yeah. Originally Nuklon from Infinity Inc.
But Atom Smasher is this character who has a legacy part of two different characters, from the Golden Age. He is technically the grandson of a supervillain, Cyclotron, and he's also the godson of the Golden Age Atom. So he's... What?
Al Pratt.
Yeah. So he sort of is, like, honoring both legacies by being a hero, kind of. It's an interesting idea, and he's a hot-headed guy. It's a character that I kind of like, but at the same time, he's done so many, like, really stupid bonehead things. It's like, really? Really, Al? Really, you gotta do that?
Okay, what was the worst bonehead? Joining Black Adam's
yes.
coalition in Kondok,
yes.
or potentially futzing the time stream by replacing his mother with Extant during one of the first JSA story arcs?
Black Adam, helping Black Adam is definitely up there. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Hey, you got Black Adam. You also have Damage, which I did kind of forgot about that character, except for what happened with him during Infinite Crisis, where he got fucked up by Hunter Zolomon Zoom. And then he starts wearing a hood and adapts his costume. He kind of looks like a modern version of Al Pratt Adam, but he's actually the grandson of, was it Iron Monroe, who's a character, again, that I remember reading in All-Star Squadron.
Well,
isn't Iron Monroe the dude that...
Superman replacement, yes.
Yeah,
there were three characters that they used to replace the big three in Golden Age stories in the DC comics. And then they sort of like, Hippolyta was the Golden Age replacement later on. Like, there's Iron Monroe, who's the Superman replacement, who had, like, the Golden Age Superman powers of only an exploding shell. And the Batman replacement was really fucking weird. It was like
flying fox.
Yeah, it was like, it was a Native American guy that wore a flying fox costume.
That was that any worse than Neptune Perkins?
I gotta be honest with you. I think the whole idea of replace the Golden Age stories with linears was just a bad fucking idea.
Yeah, well, that was All Star. But
what
sticking
was,
with
yeah, I don't even remember what was fucking Flying Fox's real name, anyways. Oh, his real name is Flying Fox. Jesus Christ! Thanks, DC.
Hey, that guy with that costume—he's called Flying Fox. Doesn't he look like that guy that you know that you work with, named Flying Fox? No, that guy doesn't wear a mask. That's a different Flying Fox. Wow, that sounded incredibly racist. But to stick with DC, like, a concept of legacy is very prevalent in DC. I mean, it's prevalent in Marvel too, but I think it's a little more inherent in DC characters. Like, even look at the Batman has this weird legacy. Like, you know, he has the Robins, and, you know, Tim and Dick and Jason have all become Robins. I mean, I think the first concept of Batman's legacy that I was exposed to was, you know, Nightfall and Nightquest in the 90s, where Azrael took over and he got that 90s AF, I got the Freddy Krueger gloves, you know, mech suit costume that he had, which I love the design of that, even though it's so bad. But I mean, that was the first experience that never occurred to me until reading those stories. Is like, yeah, Bruce Wayne's not always going to be Batman. In fact, they followed up him dealing with Azrael's. He went on, like, Walkabout or something to kind of get his shit together. And it was one of the first times for a few months that Dick Grayson became Batman. unlike, you know, in the aughts, like, he hated having to be Batman, but, you know, well, Gotham City needs Batman, so. I know, what do you guys think about the whole idea of Batman's legacy and his sons taking over, potentially?
I like a lot of it. Now, with Batman, I have to say that people always try to paint this picture of Batman. He's going to have a really terrible end, and he's going to have a real terrible life. There was a Batman annual that was done with him and Catwoman, and the one thing that I really loved was this panel of Bruce on his deathbed, and there are all his kids, and I'm saying his kids, even though I think the only one that's biologically his is Damian and later on Helena in that shot, but no, he had a whole family there waiting there with him, and it was a beautiful shot. It was a beautiful scene.
Yeah. So, I mean, what do you think of Batman's legacy, Red?
Depends on the writer. Like, depends on the character, too. My opinion, only Dick Grayson is worthy to be fucking Batman.
He's the only one who doesn't covet it.
That's why.
Exactly. He's the only one. Exactly.
Because all the rest do terrible jobs as Batman. Dick Grayson may not act like fucking Bruce. He may not be this Dark Knight. I'm scary. He may not be that guy. He'll be his own fucking Batman. Like he was when Grant Morrison wrote him. Grant Morrison understood that. But he would be a true successor because he'd be, to steal a fucking quote from, what you can call it, from Justice League Unlimited, there's very few people who care for their fellow men as much as Bruce Wayne. And Dick Grayson is one of them.
Yeah. And another thing to add about that is I think Red's right. The fact that Dick doesn't covet the role of Batman, the fact that he spent a good portion of his young adulthood running from that legacy completely, but he knows that if he needs to, without hesitation, he'll put that cowl on if he needs to.
Yeah.
And because everyone else, all the other kids, I think the only one that, with the continuity and the characterization I recognize, the only other one that would not want to be Batman is probably Tim Drake, but who knows how they fucked him up. And the only other ones I know that would, all the other Robins want to be Batman. Like fucking, what's his name?
Jason Todd,
oh yeah. He would want to be Batman. Fucking Damian, he wants to be Batman. What's his name? Signal or Duke?
Duke really wants that.
Oh fuck, you're kidding yourself.
No, I'm not.
Batwing, not really technically, he's more of an ancillary character. I think he would jump at the chance to be a Batman. Everyone else is sort of like, wants to rise up there, and Dick's the only one who's like, I want to establish myself first. I want to be myself. I don't want to be Batman. And it's like, okay, Batman's dead. And he's like, damn it, okay, I'll fucking do it, because it has to be done. Who knows if and when Helena shows up, what her characterization would be like. I don't know.
I don't think Duke, having read most of the modern Batman titles involving Duke's not really in it for the same reasons. Like, he was part of that whole We Are Robin title where he was first introduced, and it's basically because his mom and dad are in a permanent psychosis because they were exposed to like a very severe strain of the Joker toxin that basically drove them insane instead of just killing them with the rictus grins. I don't think Duke's really into it. He's kind of got his own thing. What's her name? Spoiler, was Robin for like 5 minutes. I don't think she really wants to become Batwoman. She wanted to be Batgirl. And there's Cass. Cassandra
just wants to be loved and
wants
to be seen as useful and a friend and stuff. That's her primary. People who don't understand her characterization, that's her primary motive, is to She wants to be a part of a family.
Yeah.
And I mean, people don't understand that. She's part of her own legacy, and the fact that she comes from two killers, two of the worst killers in the DC universe. And she's the one that, again, if you go with the continuity and the characterization that I think fits her the most, the original Chuck Dixon run, she's the one who saw what it's like to kill. And she saw the fear and the life fade out of someone's eyes when they die. And she made the decision to not do that.
Yeah.
After she did it once. But that's the interesting thing to me about her is she seeks love. She seeks acceptance. She seeks to know that she's doing good. Yeah. And she's part of the Bat legacy because Bruce saw her and he's like, you are worthy of the symbol.
Yeah. And also in DC, I think one of the biggest things that's kind of baked into the character at this point is the Flash. You know, you had Jay Garrick and you have Barry Allen, who was inspired by the comics before, you know, they introduced the Earth 2 and all that. And you have Wally, Bart, who I don't totally agree with Geoff Johns' reasoning for how he made Bart better.
Jesus Christ.
I really don't. I mean, Ben's repeated that story to me for dozens of times over the years, folks, and I agree.
I didn't like him, so I changed him until I liked him.
Yeah, that, like, dude, like, come on. Like, if that's your personal reason why, fine. Like, just don't say that shit out loud. Like, come up with some flowery... You know, you fucking interned for, the guy that directed the first Superman. Thank you. God, why could I not remember that? You interned for, like, one of the guy responsible for some of my most beloved films is my childhood. You couldn't come up with a bullshit reason that just sounded like, no, that's cool. That makes sense. No, you're just like, no, I didn't like the guy, so I had Deathstroke kneecap him with a shotgun. And that made him want to be better. Yeah, because that's what happens with trauma. You get shot by a shotgun, you want to get better. And it's like, I just want to walk again, asshole. But we were talking about this off air before we got on the mic tonight. Like, the whole idea of Bart, like, literally became the Flash, but only as a lead up to Final Crisis, and then they killed him at the end of that story for no other reason than we're going to have bring Wally back, and that's going to suck all the Speed Force away from Bart, and then he's going to get shanked by the Rogues because reasons, which kind of, you know, shits on the legacy of the Impulse title, which was, that was Peter David, right, Ben?
Impulse title was originally Mark Waid.
Was it Waid? Okay, I thought it was Peter David for some. But
it was Mark Waid, and some of the writing talent also had to be attributed to the original artist, who was
hey, Pastor Romero.
What?
If you're talking about the Impulse,
yes,
artist,
comic,
yes,
and it's Humberto Ramirez.
No, there was another artist that was the one that died.
He did Flash. He didn't do the Impulse comic.
Oh. Okay, never mind then. But, it's really interesting to me about Impulse, because I loved Impulse as a character. Peter David, much as maligned personality he has...
And the artist you're talking about is Mike Waringo.
Yes. Yes, so sad that he passed. But the... Impulse as a character, I mean, Peter David nailed it when he, in the first issue of Young Justice, when he had Red Tornado basically said, you're the id, the ego, and the superego. And it goes into one of the writing disciplines that Red has been telling me about, the four humors, the four-man band and stuff like that. And a lot of that was present in the early issues of Young Justice. Impulse as the guy who, you know, flies off the handle. Not hot-headed, but with no filter. It worked really great. And it's just really weird saying all these positive things about Peter David as a writer, because he is a damn good writer. It's just he's so fucking up his own asshole.
Yeah. I mean, we used to think the same thing about Mark Waid before Mark Waid lost his damn mind. And when you speak about that first issue of Young Justice, that is never the whole idea of, you know, the id, the ego, and the superego as to had two great moments. So the one was like, why is Superboy's all butter? Why is Robin's superego? He's so salty about that. But when Red Tornado is like, yes, I was sitting here in like standby mode, but your behavior made me want to smack all of you, particularly Impulse.
Yes.
No, I the idea of Legacy in the Flash comics, at least, also gave rise to it's one of my favorite Flash arcs. Mostly because of the art, because it was done by Paul Pelletier, who was a longtime artist on Green Lantern before he moved over to Flash. And this was it was a Chain Lightning, which was like the last story arc just before the Dark Flash, like Walter West, showed up, where you meet this villain called Cobalt Blue, who's supposed to be the evil twin brother of Barry Allen, and he's got this blue gem that sucks the power out of the Flash, and it results in like Bart, Jay, Wally, all having to go through the timeline with a piece of the gem and giving it to each Flash, and every time they run into a new Flash, they have to meet them while they're fighting a new version of Cobalt Blue, and then it all kind of just ends with Wally going off into the ether to search for Linda, who's been missing for a while. No one remembers her. But I love the idea that, you know, the Flash, like throughout the ages, you see all these different versions of the Flash, like they're all spun off from Barry Allen in a way. And you don't see a lot, like you see some of that with Batman, with Superman. You sometimes see the idea of Legacy with Green Lanterns, but it's usually like in the Legion of Superheroes continuity where there's no Lanterns, like there's one Lantern ring left, and I think it's the Legion villain Universo, who looks like a sci-fi version of Dr. Mindbender from G.I. Joe, who's obsessed with getting the last ring and, you know, taking over the universe. And it's always like this one person who has the will and the courage to become a Green Lantern again. Like, it's just like the Flash. It's just something about that seems to work, right?
Well, the Flash and the whole concept of the family with Flash, I wouldn't say it was ingrained early on, because it wasn't. It was, but when they first introduced Wally West, that's where the whole concept of the family started, because Wally was, what was he, like the
nephew? President of...
No, he was like the nephew of Barry's Iris. Of Iris, who Barry was seeing at the time, and that's how the sort of whole family thing came, because Wally and Barry, you know, it was more than just them a partnership or a teacher mentor relationship. It was surrogate father, surrogate son, and they literally would have done anything for each other for the longest time. And but the thing that people don't realize is that, you know, the son becomes the father.
And even years later, where they retconned Wally's origin, that Barry may or may not have mentally called down the lightning to hit that shelf of chemicals, which had, you know, the exact same chemicals that gave him his power and forged his connection to the Speed Force. Which is how I've always seen that origin, like the idea that the speed... I like the idea that the Speed Force was created in the moment that Barry Allen was struck by the electrified chemicals, and it just propagated through space-time forward and back. But even I have to admit, ultimately, it's like, does it really work?
No, it makes Barry too important.
Yeah.
And but that's the one thing I have a problem with, is Barry is way too important as the Flash in current DC, or the last 15 years of DC. Like, Barry is important to Wally. Barry is important to Bart. Barry could even be important to, like, the people that personally knew him, but Barry's not important to everybody.
Yeah, but what I was kind of getting at with the idea of, like, Barry creating Kid Flash and Wally like that goes, you know, very much to the idea of legacy with any man is, you know, he wanted a son. You know, I think it was entirely a subconscious thing. If you go with that origin, it's like, you know, he wanted a little running buddy to be trailing behind him so he could spout off these Flash facts, which is, you know, and it goes to, you know, Wally growing up and, you know, going through the growing pains, you know, through those first few years of the rebooted Flash title after Crisis were kind of rough. I mean, granted, they were coming out in, you know, the mid to late 80s like that, and wasn't until like 92, 93, about, you know, 5 or 6 years later where it really got gaining traction, even before Mark Waid came on and revamped the titles. You know, you see Wally grow, and you I think of all the Flash characters, as important as Barry Allen is, Wally is so firmly entrenched in the idea of legacy, you know, because he's, you know, trying to live up to the ideal that is Barry Allen, and then becoming like the fastest Flash of all time, and then having his kids who I don't mean to sound callous and mean, but the less we talk about his two kids, the better.
Well,
but that's mainly because no one ever wrote that part of Wally's story very well, I think.
Well, you can talk about two kids there. Talk about Barry's fucking two kids. Jesus Christ.
Don and Don?
Yeah. Because other than the fact that one of them sired Bart, they're completely unimportant.
It depends on when you read the comics. Like, they feature mostly in the early 80s before the Crisis of Infinite Earths, where Barry was like, fuck the 20th century, I'm going to go live in the 25th century.
Well, after his trial?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the, you know, his foes also have, like, the whole idea of the Rogues, you know, we've had multiple versions of a couple of the main Rogues. There's, you know, Captain Boomerang Jr. for one is his dad.
Yes, I
know, but the idea he's actually part of the Flash family, because I don't think they ever named who his mom was, but it was heavily implied that it was Dawn.
They named who his mom is. He's Barry Allen's older brother, or Bart Allen's older brother.
Yeah.
Okay, I might have missed that one. I just remember seeing like one issue where Captain Boomerang was talking about his baby mama, and she was shown in shadow. I never read a comic where they named her.
And he could only do very, very, very tiny, small, insignificant, like 50-meter sprints.
Yeah, he got bursts, I think they called it.
He didn't use the bursts to run, though. He used them to throw his boomerangs.
He used them to run once, and only once, to save his dad from a boomerang. And that's when he discovered he had super speed, and his dad told him the story of, yeah, I knocked up this chick in the future, kind of, sort of. I was amnesiac, so I didn't know I was a villain. And
no. In DC, again, I like bad comics. I find some of the ideas in the story fascinating. It does not by any means make the characters or the stories they're in okay. But I've always kind of been fascinated with the idea of legacy, and if you apply it to the character of Manhunter. Because you have that original great Manhunter story, which I think originally was published as backups in Batman, wasn't it?
Yeah, like that's how Manhunter started. Manhunter,
yeah.
Like, Manhunter's just a really...
It's a very interesting story, and by no means good. Because, I mean, you have, you know, the original Manhunter hero character from the 30s and 40s, you know, Paul Kirk, big game hunter. He hunts the most dangerous prey, man. And then they have this where they reinvent the character, like, or reinvent, but bring him back into the zeitgeist where he's been cloned by the Council, who's like this secret society on par with Marvel's Secret Empire, and they're going to correct the world for genetic manipulation. He kills all his clones and dies. Then you have the Mark Shaw Manhunter, who eventually went nuts two or three times and became a villain. And you have the Chase something, the one Manhunter that came out of Zero Hour, where he was possessed by this ancient spirit. And then you have the Kate...
The lawyer. She was the worst one.
You know what? She makes a lot more sense than some of the others, because they, in her tell, you find out the whole idea that Mark Shaw and that second Manhunter, or the one right after him but before Kate, were basically infected by a nanotech from the DEO, because in the Mark Shaw one, they had this guy named Dumas, who was this evil Manhunter who used to work for Director Bones, and it turned out that Mark Shaw just had a split personality because of the nanotech. And the one right after him, like, the whole mystic aspect was explained as the nanotech was basically driving him insane. And finally they explained that in the Kate one, like the new modern one, where, you know, she literally breaks into the evidence storage in Gotham City and steals a bunch of shit and becomes a vigilante. And you might think, well, that doesn't make sense, but then again, it's Gotham City. You give the supply clerk a donut and $20 and he loses a half hour of his time. And you look back at Marvel, what are some legacy in Marvel that you can think of?
I mean, there really aren't that many, because Marvel has this rule about the heroes not having a lot of kids. I mean, Reed Richards was able to get away with it, but like a lot of the other characters, they're like, yeah, no, you're not allowed to have kids. Like, Spider-Man has a weird legacy born out of the fact that people want to create alternate Spider-Man. Unless we want to talk about his alternate future children, which I think is a much better topic, but the fact that, oh, it's the spider bit someone else, and here's a black Spider-Man, here's
that's all multiversal these... stuff, though.
We started with Spider-Man.
We're right back fucking on him. Like Captain America does not have a legacy, really, because everyone
Sam
else.
Sam Wilson,
Bucky.
I'm getting to that, because everyone else is trying to, like Bucky and Sam Wilson. Okay, he does have a legacy. I take that back, but in the last 10 years, he didn't have a legacy. Prior to the last 10 years, he didn't really have a legacy. He had, like, this really weird...
Nomad?
That's exactly what I'm talking about. Fucking Nomad. Fucking the Grand Director. You want to talk about the Grand Director?
I don't know. I think Red might be talking about that.
Let's talk about Protocide. You want to talk about legacies with Captain America. Protocide!
That's not really a legacy, though. That was before Steve Rogers. If anything, Captain America's his legacy.
Like, Captain America has a lot of has a quote legacy of lots of false starts and imitators, and only out of which three people who ever lived up to the shield. At most.
You're not wrong. I mean, you had Jack Flagg, who fought crime with a boombox. But that's more inspired by than a legacy. But, I mean, the whole idea of legacy, according to, as viewed through the prism that is Captain America, it's not so much a person, you know, it's more of a legacy of ideals. Which...
Yes, and that's why so few people lived up to it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, like I said, it's just so weird, because he has so many... imitators, some people who fell not just short, but incredibly short. You had Johnny Walker, you had fucking the Grand Director. It's
Jack Monroe.
Jack Monroe. There's not just stumbles, but outright face flat, splat on the ground sort of just face awful. First. Yeah. And if you want to pick a legacy, probably Sam Wilson and Bucky are the only things that really kind of count.
Yeah. I mean, one thing I think we kind of forgot is the whole idea of legacy is, again, baked right into the Black Panther.
What I like is the fact that they made a point that that T'Challa's was a grandfather actually had adventures with Steve Rogers in World War II.
Yeah.
He kicked Steve Rogers' ass, that's it.
No, there was a...
He was like, you can't fucking come to Wakanda, go fuck yourself.
No, there was... He had adventures with him, too. Like, there was more than just the kicking ass thing in the... that one run by... That was drawn by
Romita.
Romita Jr. No, there was other adventures they had.
Yeah.
The only thing I remember is they're like, oh, we need more vibranium because the shield comes from Wakanda. Let's go there. Oh, everybody's getting fucking slaughtered. Black Panther kicks fucking Captain America's ass. And that's it.
I remember other adventures.
Yeah, there was like a dedicated graphic novel, I think. And the idea of just kind of a little mix of both their legacies, like when they're talking about grandfather T'Challa kicking Steve Rogers' ass. You have that one Navy admiral get up. He's like, bullshit. That didn't fucking happen. And it's like, because the legacy of Captain America, the legend of Captain America is such that these guys wouldn't countenance. They're like, there's no way Cap would lose a fight. Nuh-uh. Yeah, you got like the idea of like it's the history of, you know, the Panther tribe in Wakanda and how they do all that. And there's also like Wolverine's got a really messed up legacy. Like, you know, you have Logan or James Hallett if you're nasty, then you have, you know, was it Albert, who's like that weird cyborg robot.
Oh
yeah,
my god, that's not talking
with
about
the little Albert. Girl with the little girl robot.
LCD.
Less you talk about him the better.
And then you have you know, Laura, Gabby, you know, Honey Badger, and Dokken. You know, he's got his own little legacy there.
Okay, Wolverine does have a legacy, but the honest truth is, knowing Logan's personality, I'm surprised he doesn't have a long, long, long litany of bastards.
Like that D&D meme about a lone bard facing the big bad evil guy and then an army of his children showing up to kick his ass?
Yes, like if the rest of him heals like he does and is as strong as he is, shouldn't he have like a fucking?
He could go ahead. He could be like Sabretooth. He could have fucking human kids. Like, you don't fucking know. Because Sabretooth has a bunch of kids and most of them are fucking human.
True.
So was it Graydon Creed, like the Friends of Humanity guy?
Yeah.
But all I'm saying is Wolverine probably spread his seed far and wide, and there should be more than two.
That's called the plot of fucking Ultimate X-Men, Ben.
Okay. Point taken. Point taken. Yeah. And you know, I'm going to just say 1.5, because technically Laura was grown in a lab. And yeah, Dokken was actually fucking, like, handmade, so to speak.
Yeah, but when you stick with the X-Men, and again, something more along the lines of the idea of a legacy, not necessarily your progeny or a protege that will follow you, is, you know, for Wild years we...
Bored you.
Okay, I got this. What is getting is, like, for years we had this somewhat deified image of old Chuck Xavier of being like, you know, this mutant Buddha who just wants everyone to get along, and we got one world, guys, we all got to share it, like, come on, we can do this. And then you have like the whole thing, which goes back to the very first issue, about him lusting after Jean and then finding out all the bullshit he pulled and like mind wiping the X-Men with like Vulcan and the second generation X-Men team that died on Krakoa. Not to mention whatever the hell is actually going on with the X-Men right now.
They're all pod people, literal fucking pod people.
Ben, we've discussed that before. I'm just saying the idea of, like, he used to have, like, a good legacy, a great legacy, even the black mark that is Legion.
Look,
you know, with his...
In the modern X-Men comics, there's a map of Krakoa, and there's this place called the Unknown Place in Krakoa, where Moria MacTaggert apparently is.
Yes.
I have a feeling all the X-Men's bodies are stored there.
Yeah. I have a feeling that that something is happening, and it's going to turn out it was Moria all along, and they're trying to hold this back. Other than the very first issue where they reveal the whole fucking thing, and then they're like, oh, we're not going to show her anymore. And they did. They stopped fucking showing her. And I think they're waiting for this whole, you know, it was me, Austin. It was me the whole time kind of thing.
Now, the way the story is building right now, like they had one of the last issues where Mystique failed in the mission. So Magneto and Chuck say, well, sorry, we're not going to clone Destiny. You don't get your own pod person, which is going to lead towards her burning down Krakoa and probably revealing whatever the secrets are that Moira is trying to hide,
and
whether or not that ends up resulting in rebooting the timeline.
Well, like I said, the biggest problem I have with Charles Xavier is Charles Xavier as a idea is a beautiful idea, is a wonderful idea, but 40 years of comic writing has turned every slight moral bend and moral gray area and morally dubious choice he's made, like, elevated them and magnified them and made them worse and worse and worse. And now he's a monster. Charles Xavier is a monster. And there's no way around it. It's just what we're stuck with now. He was a monster that had a beautiful idea. And Charles Xavier also has a really weird alternate timeline legacy. Like, he has future kids with future alternate kids with fucking Mystique and what was the other one? He has like a couple of future alternate kids. They tried to do something weird with Charles Xavier and his kids in fucking Ultimate X-Men, where they combine Proteus and Legion into one character.
I can get that. I thought it was just like the ultimate take on Proteus. But I kind of sum up my thoughts on Xavier and his tainted legacy. And I had to look up the lyrics here. It's a lyric from the Arthur Douglas Thomas Jefferson epic rap battle of history. And it ended with Douglas saying, "Man, you did some good things. I ain't denying your fame. I'm just saying they need to put an asterisk next to your name." And that's, you know, exactly what's going on with Xavier. Like, he used to be this great guy, and a lot of, you know, both in the title and in reality with the fans, it's just, he used to be this, but then you find out about all this bullshit, and it's like, you know, you used to be able to trust Xavier, but now you don't want to trust Xavier. That's all I'm saying.
The X-Men have a lot of legacies. Like, yes. As I brought up, the Wild Men of Borneo. Cable is one of the most horrific fucking legacies ever.
The Summers Gray family tree is, in and of itself, just filled with legacies.
A Gordian knot.
Yeah. You have Cable, you have X-Man, and for a long time I thought Cable and X-Man were the same dude.
Technically, X-Man does not consider himself part of the family. He's a clone, and he fucking knows it.
And he's also Jesus.
Yes. For some fucking reason, they recently brought him back, and they made him look like Jesus. With a white fucking skunk stripe, and it's stupid.
And he's wearing long, flowing Jesus robes.
Yes, I know. They made him look like Jesus, so it's covered already.
Yes. But then you have, like, all the other... You have Rachel... You have Hope, who I thought Hope was just some kid who happened to be a redhead, and now they made it to where Hope is part of the family somehow.
Hope wasn't even born. Like, she was just a random kid born in Alaska. Like, originally, when the series, when she's first introduced, it was hinted that she was Jean Grey in Reborn.
Yeah.
Now they're like, oh, she's Cable's daughter or something.
Adopted daughter.
And her power is basically Rogue without the touchy touch.
And is that... Sorry, you go, Red.
One of my favorite recaps of the Messiah Complex is from Floating Hand Studios, and the X-Men are all fighting. Then the fucking... Like, what is that? The... Not the Friends of Humanity. The cyborg dudes that hate fucking mutants.
Ravagers?
The Ravagers show up, and they start fighting. Then this big fucking cyborg monster shows up, and Scott Summers is like, what is that thing? What does it have to do with anything? What's going on? And then it clips to Wolverine. Oh, don't worry, I killed it, eh?
That's the voice. You did.
That's the voice we need. That's the voice we need for Wolverine.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, but, okay, there's Vulcan. We can't forget about Vulcan.
Oh, we most assuredly can forget about Vulcan.
Who would you rather have as a third Summers brother?
We have Alex. Don't forget Alex. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Now Scott, Alex, and Adam X. That's it.
So here's the big question, because I'm confused, because I was reading through the fucking whole thing with fucking the fucking island, the Krakoa fucking, you know, Age of X or House of X story. Alex is seeing Madeline Pryor?
Seeing physically or seeing in his head?
Like, he's fucking her.
I think that's a mental thing, because they've had several issues of the X-Men where he's constantly petitioning Scott and the rest of the Quiet Council, like the ruling body of Krakoa, to clone Madeline, but she wasn't an actual mutant. At best, they consider her a mutate, and that's when everyone gets really racist about, well, she's not a pure mutant, Alex.
She's, like for Christ's sake, she
And she's just a clone, though. I mean, it was the
They're all clones thing. Now!
Ben, calm the fuck down. When she was introduced, she was a clone made by Mr. Sinister, yada, yada, yada. That's how we got Cable now, because that's her son with Scott.
Okay.
And everything.
Can I point out one thing? Can I point out one thing?
That they're all pod people?
No, the Sinister that we are seeing here in the Quiet Council is a literal clone that killed his previous clone self. It's like, well, this Sinister that I am now is technically a mutant because I cloned myself to be a mutant. Like, how is that allowed, but Madeline Pryor not?
Because shut up, that's why.
Yeah. Reasons. Comics. Just saying, it's... Yeah, I sorry, if we had three Summers brothers, it's Scott, Alex, and Adam X.
Adam X is fucking terrible.
It's still better than Vulcan.
My favorite Adam X line is during the fucking Fear Itself storyline, where they're like, we sent in Adam X in order to stop the Juggernaut. Now... Previously, we had an unstoppable force.
Now we have a constantly exploding unstoppable force.
Yeah.
But it's the one thing I have to add about this, the whole Scott Summers, Jean Grey fucking family tree, is it's a mess. It's a fucking mess. And the one thing I hate the most with this family tree is they're like, oh yeah, Scott's a cuck now, by the way.
It's all part of the cover up to not make them realize they're being manipulated.
There's a Kennedy door in the Scott and Jean's bedroom that goes to Wolverine's bedroom.
I thought Scott and Wolverine had a bedroom on either side of Jean's.
Okay, you know what? Okay, the whole Summers house is full of fucking Kennedy doors. And let's not forget the other branching, the thick
let's oak not of forget the there's a Kennedy door for fucking Emma.
Oh, Jesus, you're
there's
right.
The whole of Krakoa is nothing but a Kennedy door. Because all they're doing is partying, getting drunk, and making mutant babies. Maybe.
We haven't seen really any fucking that. Pregnant mutants yet. But also, we forgot the thick, trunk of the Summers family tree. The space pirate.
I think we're going off like he's just bitching about fucking the new X-Men comics. Yeah. We can have an entire episode about that.
Okay, you're right. Let's go back to legacies. Let's talk about one of our favorite legacy heroes. And we're going off of Marvel. We're going off of DC. And we've talked about this character a lot because we fucking love this character. Let's talk about Mark Grayson, Invincible.
I was going to bring up the Young Avengers, but that's a whole episode in itself.
Yeah. And the one thing I want to start with talking about Mark Grayson, Invincible, is it reminds me of a really short trade that was done in the late 90s about this kid who finds out that he is the son of Superman. And this book is called Son of Superman. It's not a great book by any means, but there are some solid ideas to it. There's some great character moments between this kid and his mother, Lois. And there's this great moment when he finds out his dad's still alive and he rescues him. It's rough. The book is fucking rough, but there are ideas there. And feels like Kirkman's like, well, let's get some sandpaper. Well, let's shine this up.
The whole Son of Superman thing isn't a new idea, and isn't the most original fucking idea ever. And this is me who's been working on a comic for the last 10 years, doing almost the exact same fucking thing. Like, I admit it's not the most original idea on the fucking block. Like, anybody can come up with it.
I fucking love it though.
I mean, when you talk about Invincible, Mark Grayson, even knowing what we know now and where the story ends up, it's not a story that we've really seen before involving a Superman-esque character. Like, sure, we all love Jonathan Kent, you know, the current Superboy, more so before he got lost in time inside a volcano for several years and came back a teenager. But when we're first introduced to him, you know, he's Superboy and he's this, you know, firecracker full of, you know, piss and vinegar. But we don't see him where he got to the point because of the New 52 and Rebirth. And we never really got much even in that Superman and Lois miniseries. But, you know, we see, you know, very quickly from that first issue, we get it very quickly, understand Mark's, you know, like, I know my dad's here, but we see him from the moment he gets his powers and going forward in his life and having to deal with all the bullshit that comes with the revelation that Omni-Man was this sleeper agent. And with also many other fascinating characters in the Invincible comic, I think it's one of the few things that I think Kirkman made a mistake is he didn't really spend too much time with any of the other characters in terms of their legacy. What do you guys think about that?
Well, the book's called Invincible. I mean, if you want to read about the fucking chick with the boxing gloves, go read Invincible Universe.
That's not what I was getting at, Ben. But in terms of that, like, what's, you know, what's part of Mark's legacy that you enjoy?
I liked the final book where you had, I liked moments of the final book. I liked the stuff with Terra where Terra sort of breaks away from Mark and the new empire and tries to find her own way. But, you know, because her mom's dying, they sort of come together and Mark's like, none of that matters now. All that matters is we have to be together. And there's, you know, and that brought them together. That really did bring them back together. And I like that. I like the stuff about how you know, this series started bloody. And then it ended with fucking Silver Age Superman. So there's something magical about that.
Yeah.
I think that that's one of the best things he did in the comic was how he ended it with that final issue. Is sorry, you go red. Is you see him kind of look back on his history a little bit, you know, as he's going forward in, you know, in time with Eve and his family and leading the Viltrumites. And, you know, when you look back at Mark's legacy, you know, at the end of the story like that, it's like he had a pretty good legacy overall, I think. Even some of the bullshit that he pulled with Cecil and Dinosaurus and all that. But I think he has a legacy he could be proud of.
To me, it's all prevalent on, like, Mark's last fucking... last thing he says. He says, my dad asked me, what would I have in 500 years? And then you just see him smile.
Because you don't need to be told. You, if you've been with the story to the end, you understand.
Yeah.
And when you talk about legacy, like how the first season of the animated series ended with, you know, with Nolan asking, you know, what are you going to have? I'll have you, Dad. And just like, oh, that emotional gut punch. I mean, and again, the best thing about the idea of legacy in Invincible, I think, is the going back to what I said about, oh, was the talk about getting out from under his shadow. I forget which country. It's the idea of Mark, you know, trying to live up to and then get out from under the legacy of his father and his actions in the title. I don't know what else can be said.
Check out Invincible. It's a good book.
Damn right. Now, as we kind of wrap it up here, one thing I want to ask you guys, what's a character that not necessarily has the best legacy, but one that you find is a really interesting legacy you might suggest? And I would put forth Ghost Rider, you know, with the, you know, the Johnny Blaze, the Danny Ketch stories,
Carter, you know, Slade.
Carter Slade, I think there's a lot of legacy in that character, and I think it's something that's, you know, if you want to put the time in, you know, deep dive the wikis and you read some graphic novels, I think Ghost Rider's in a character with a very unique legacy that I think is worth checking out. What about you guys?
Ghost Rider's kind of one note for me. Like he has a really cool visual, but... like, other than, like, three good stories, I can't really think of a reason to read Ghost Rider. Like, and I'm a Johnny Blaze guy.
Yeah. But I meant, what's a character that you would recommend that hasn't, you think has a legacy worth checking out, Ben?
That's a hard question. I mean, I'm a big DC guy. I'm a big Batman guy. I'm a big Superman guy. And I liked the stuff that showed up when Jonathan Kent first started showing up. I liked those books. I can't recommend anything after a certain point because the writers fucked it up. They shat the bed. I liked Super Sons a lot. Super Sons was fantastic. And I think that's kind of a great book to show two different legacies.
Super Sons was written by somebody you can tell had fucking children. Because there's a lot of things in adulthood you forget you did it as a child. An example is like kids argue and they're like, we're not fucking friends anymore. Then the next day they're best friends again.
Yeah.
I mean, never mind what the actual plan is with DC Comics and that push to make Jonathan the new Superman. You know, I can totally see him becoming Superman down the line versus, you know, we haven't seen much in the way of what adult Damian's going to be other than the future hellscape that Gotham becomes where, you know, he's like Sign of the Beast and he's Batman in a trench coat. I would hope it gets better than that if they ever age him up to the point that he becomes Batman.
I hope he doesn't become Batman.
Damian doesn't deserve to be Batman because he covets it too much.
But how about you, Red? What's the character you think has a legacy worth checking out?
Off the top of my head, I didn't say much while you guys were talking about The Flash, but I'd have to say Wally West is probably the best example of a legacy character. He's somebody who did not believe in himself. Like, after fucking Barry dies, he's like, oh, I can only run the speed of sound. Like, he has this mental block where he thinks Barry's the greatest thing since fucking sliced bread, and he can never live up to him. And you gotta... That's why I don't recommend the early comics until the return of Barry Allen. Because a lot of it is just Wally being depressed. And it can get to you. Yeah. And after the return of Barry Allen, you see Wally slowly become his own person, his own Flash, and live up to fucking Barry's legacy and make his own legacy. Like, he doesn't live, like, Mark Waid and Michael Ringo did such a good job of writing Wally to the point that he wasn't just Kid Flash taking over the Flash. He was the Flash. He wasn't in Barry's shadow anymore. Barry was in his shadow. To the point that when they brought back Barry Allen, they turned him into a Wally clone and had to get rid of fucking Wally because he didn't want anybody to go, hey, isn't Barry kind of acting like Wally?
Yeah.
Because I'm sorry, but fucking, if you ever read the 80s comics with Barry Allen, Barry Allen has a personality of fucking moldy, cold fucking oatmeal.
Barry was very boring and very strict and straight and wooded.
Stale.
It's a symptom of the writing back then, and it's just Barry works better as a dead ideal than a living hero. He's better as a monument.
Now, like, Jeff Jones brought him back because Jeff Jones was one of the fans that would constantly write DC and say, where's Barry? How come you're not bringing him back? Can you bring Barry back? Where's Barry?
And the second he got any power, he starts doing everything he wrote to his letters to the editor because that's the kind of guy he is.
Yeah. And, you know, when it comes to, you know, The Flash and family legacy, the only thing I thought they ever did right with the kids was in that Flash Rebirth miniseries where Iris, you know, absorbed like Jay's portion of the Speed Force because they had this whole weird dyad twins of this Force thing, and she became like a new version of Impulse. And I was like, okay, that's cool. I dig that.
It lasted 2 months, and then they did fucking 52.
Not 52.
Flashpoint.
That's it, yeah. I mean, the 52 came after that, but that's... Well, they had the Flash Rebirth miniseries, and they had a Barry-led Flash series, which ran for, like, the year leading up to Flashpoint and the new 52. So, yeah. Visually, it works. Story-wise, I was just waiting for Jay to... If they had kept that going, I guarantee you within a year, somebody would have thought, well, Jay's all butthurt because he doesn't have powers anymore. Can we make him, like, a kid, Professor Zoom? And you know Johns would have wrote that. You know he would have done that.
Yeah.
So, I don't know what more we can say.
I think that's a good way to wrap it up. We talked about our heroes that came from big legacies and different running legacies of heroes. This hero's Ben.
JT from Saskatoon.
Reading.
Say goodnight.
So long.
Peace out.